Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, June 15th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke. I'll be your host for the next hour or so to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here on today's show. We got a great show coming your way today. I'll be joined by Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. In the second half of today's show, we talk about the U.S. Open at Oakmont. Should be a really, really great event. We've got a little bit of rain moving in here, which is something I'll talk about with Wes coming up on today's show, what that impact has on the course, because rain is going to be a good thing, and I'm not really a big Luke Bryan fan, but I know that that's one of his lyrics. So, you know, rain will definitely be a good thing at Oakmont Country Club. It's going to soften things up a little bit for the players as they try to make putts on these awful, awful, difficult greens. Coming up the rest of the, well, actually, I guess I should mention that Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets will also be on today's show. We'll have that coming up here in a few seconds. I'll talk some Major League Baseball stuff, then we'll get into Wes's segment, then wrap up the show with whatever we may need to do. Coming up the rest of the week here on Bang the Book Radio, on Thursday's show, we'll hear from Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com, which means that Thursday's recording will be an 11:30 to 12:30 recording. Make sure that you note that change. Jay joins us on his lunch break from work a little bit after the 12 o'clock hour Eastern time. So we'll be able to chat with him about UFC Fight Night 89 in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Should be a really good event there. A couple of very impressive matchups on the main card and some good stuff on the preliminary card as well. So looking forward to that. Also hoping to get, hoping to get Donnie Kolakowski of DonnieKolakowski.com. Also today's fastbreak.com. Hoping to get him on the show. I've got an email out to him. He had mentioned that he can come on later in the week. Hopefully we can get some thoughts on the NBA Finals with Game 6 coming up on Thursday with him. Looking ahead to Friday, win or lose on Thursday for the Cleveland Cavaliers, we will have a Friday edition of Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets. Now, whether that's a preview of Game 7 or a wrap-up of the NBA season, we'll have to wait and see. But Cole Ryan will be on Friday's show with another Betting the Buckets segment. Then also, we'll hear from Kyle Kensing, CFBHuddle.com. See what he's got in the pipeline, what he's been thinking about here in the lead up to the college football season. Of course, he is one of our resident Pac-12 experts, so we'll get a lot of good takes from him on what's going on in the college football landscape. Maybe we'll talk a little bit of politics as well. Been a while since we've done that. Take a look at the betting market, look at some of the odds, vice presidential odds, all those types of things. See what we can come up with for some alternative content here to wrap up what's been a strong week thus far on Bang the Book Radio. I want to mention our site redesign, our new layout, our new relaunch. Looks like the timeline has been pushed back a couple of days for that. So it looks like maybe we do it early in the week next week. Still working through some things, adding some new features, all that type of stuff. So, some of these things take time. You always start beta testing, run into some bugs, all that type of thing. So we will unveil that here at some point over the next week to 10 days. Hopefully sooner rather than later, but make sure that you're keeping an eye over at bangthebook.com for all the information that we have. It's a great place, man. It's a one-stop shop for all your sports betting needs. I understand that maybe I'm a little bit biased, but those that go over to the site know, the quality of the content that we have over there. Of course, the sportsbook reviews are great, so all kinds of good stuff going on at bangthebook.com. And again, we're really looking to build up in a big way for the upcoming football season, from a traffic standpoint, from a show standpoint, from a quality of content, a quality of guest standpoint, so really looking to have you prepared to bang the books here during this NFL and college football season. And we're about 2 months and 2 weeks away. So, hopefully time flies while we continue to have fun here on Bang the Book Radio. But with that, we've got Game 6 of the NBA Finals coming up on Thursday night, which means it's a good time to take a listen to this Wednesday edition of Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets.
Thank you very much, Adam, and welcome everyone to another Betting the Buckets segment. A big win for the Cavs in Game 5, and now we are going to have a Game 6. But will we have a Game 7? We're going to discuss that as well as going beyond the box score for Game 5. We'll talk line watch, the movement, the opening number, the consensus, talk about changes that are ahead for Golden State, update a little bit on the Bogut injury, and feature members of the prestigious Buckets Brigade along the way before I serve up a pick against the spread for Game 6 in Cleveland. As always, the segment blazing quick with a pick. Let's get started. A lot of stuff to talk about and beyond the box score. course, I want to cover everything that happened. The biggest news, LeBron, 41 points, 16 boards, 7 assists. Irving, 41 points. They become the first pair of teammates to score at least 40 points in a finals game. If you follow me on Twitter, you saw I was kind of surprised by that. I thought Jordan, Pippen, maybe even Shaq, Kobe would have done it. But still, good game by those two guys. And I've got to be the first one to, I guess, apologize because I complained about ISO ball. Hated it, but it worked. That's all the Cavs did all night long. Irving come up, not pass anybody, shoot. James would come up, take shots from the elbow, drive the lane. It was working. Look, when you're hot, it works. When you got to do that heat check, it works. And it certainly was working. I also thought James was much more active, especially on defense. He jumped in passing lanes. He was throwing passes around. He was taking shots he doesn't normally shoot. This has a lot to do with Green being out, no doubt about it. James was just more aggressive, especially after Bogut went down with an injury. No doubt about it. He was going to the rim each and every time he had a basketball, which is what I've always wanted him to do. I really think it can open up the floor completely if he does that. Andre Iguodala, when he was out of the lineup, he was definitely going after the rim because he could basically call his own plays, call his own shots with Iguodala out. And even when he was in there, he was crushing Iguodala. LeBron James, 6 for 10, 3 of 4 from three-point range, 15 points when he was guarded by Iguodala. Each of the Cavaliers' final 25 made baskets were either scored or assisted by James Irving. So, obviously, you get the two superstars on fire. A lot of the stuff is going to happen, and everybody's talking about Green not being in. That's why they lost. Don't get me wrong. It played a big role. I would be an idiot to assume it didn't. But look, the Warriors couldn't shoot. They got cold. They missed 14 of the first 20 shots after the half, 7 of 24 in the third. They just shot 36% from the field. That just doesn't happen. And, of course, they'll talk about the Splash Brothers. Look, Klay Thompson, the guy was on fire. 26 points in the first half. He had a 31-foot three-pointer. He was shooting from crazy. It was the sixth three-pointer in the half. At that point, they were talking about the Warriors breaking their own record of three-pointers a game. That's how hot they went. But then as a whole, 11 of 21 in that opening half, so they couldn't miss. But you know what I really, really want to focus on? A lot of stuff that people didn't talk about. First of all, Steph Curry's defense, awful. Awful. Some folks on ESPN were talking about it, but I really don't hear much about it. Irving was getting some serious shots. Not only that, but the coaching was awful. Steve Kerr didn't know what to do with his rotations. If you ask me, they played too much McAdoo, and I don't really think he's talented. The same could be said with some of the other players that they have that they're throwing out there. And again, they were short. They were short, but Anderson Varejao, that guy's horrible. All he does is flop. Doesn't play defense. He's aggressive at getting rebounds. I'll give him that. But I'll be honest with you, that guy's done. Obviously, he's there to get a ring, and sure, he may get it. But he's awful. I thought they had problems with rotations. LeBron James was taking such advantage of this. Just on simple pick and rolls, it would leave other players trying to cover him that are just not used to it or just too big where they couldn't do it. Speeds, he couldn't cover him. Look, I love the Warriors. I think they're a good team, but, man, they were just beat up. And it's really not even just because of the shooting in James and Irving, just all around. Steph Curry's defense was horrible. They weren't doing well in the rotations. I would never say that Lou outcoached Kerr. I'm not going to go that far. I'll just say that Kerr struggled. Kerr struggled with his rotations, something they definitely have to clean up. But let's go right to the odds board and take a look of what transpired now that we are going back to Cleveland for Thursday night. Look, the Cavs have to be a favorite at home after that game. Bookmaker opened up the Cavs minus 2.5 with a total of 208. The line has moved since then very, very slightly. In fact, it's just the juice. If you look at Bookmaker now, Cleveland is minus 2.5, minus 105. There's even some minus 2.5 even monies out there. So, as always, shop around. As always, decide what side has the value. So, whether you want to take one early or you want to wait before tip with the line movement, you can do that. The total is dipped down. 207.5 is what I'm seeing predominantly across the boards. There's still a 208 out there. It won't last long. But when it comes to percentages, when it comes to the consensus, we're looking even. I mean, this game is starting to get a lot of even action, at least early. Golden State not getting the love. Cleveland is 55% of the early bets are on the home team. Not a surprise. Home teams have have lost the last few, but let's face it, they get more calls. No doubt about it, they get more play here. Over under, 51% of the bets on the over, so no real edge there. Nothing really stands out as far as what you may or may not want to look at when it comes to the consensus or to the move. So with nothing to look at there, there is still plenty to talk about. And what is now starting to get the attention that it did in the past is the injury to Bogut. If you didn't watch the game, first of all, shame on you. I thought it was one of the best first half, at least, that we've seen all playoffs. But I thought it was a good game all around, too. But the injury happened. Bogut, basically, he ran into J.R. Smith, had a really, really awkward hyperextension backwards. It was painful to watch. He's only averaging 4.6 points, 5 boards, 1.6 blocks. He's playing about 16 minutes per game this postseason. Those numbers don't jump off the page. The same could be said with what he averaged in the regular season, 5.7 boards, about 20 minutes per game. But I really think they'll miss him. I don't. This isn't going to be a blow-away thing. This isn't going to be a line move. The line's not going to move dramatically with him not being in the lineup. He's traveling to Cleveland, by the way. I don't have the official play or no play as of yet, but I don't think he's going to play. If he does not play, he's not going to be 100% anyway. So in my handicapping methods, I'm already kind of ruling him out. You're going to see Speets. He'll be the biggest beneficiary when it comes to extra playing time. He's not bad. He can shoot the three. He can extend. His defense is not as great as I'd like it to be, and he's horrible on rotations. Of course, then you got Festus Ezeli and the aforementioned Varejao, who's awful. So, to me, I think you're going to miss that depth. You get Draymond Green back, which is good. He kind of plays quarterback for this team, but I think they're going to miss Bogut. He gets a lot of fouls. He plays rough. He cleans the boards. I think they're going to miss him. But will it make the difference? Let's find out. Let's go to my pick for this game. And I will be honest with you, I am waiting. Hit me up on Twitter on Thursday, and I'll give you the side. But I'm going to go on the total, and I'm going right back on that over. I'm getting right back on that over, 207.5. I stayed away from the total in the last game. I just had a lean on the under. You know I don't count leans. I picked the Cavs, which was a winner, so I won in last game. But I'm going to go with the over here. It's a what goes up must come down thing as far as the Warriors are concerned, because they shot so bad. They shot so bad, they have to shoot better. I think having a Draymond Green back will kind of open up the floor, plus he'll want to prove something. If I had to make a pick right now on the side, I would lean Cavs, but I'm not going to do it. I want to be fair, and I want to make sure I get all the information leading up to the tip. So I'm not going to do it, but right now I'm going to take the over. Look for a lot of points. I think LeBron is more comfortable driving to the basket. It's going to get a lot of contact, and he's at home. Kyrie Irving, he's going to keep shooting. And look, stop hating on Kevin Love. They're playing ISO ball, which means they're not passing the ball around. With Irving and LeBron shooting so many shots, there's just not enough basketballs to go around. I know he only had 2 points, but forget about it. He's going to be good. He's going to be good. Trust me. I hate to see a max contract, and I don't want him to come to Boston, but he's a better player. He's getting a lot of grief that he doesn't deserve. So give me the over in this game right now, 207.5. Book it. I'll have a play on Twitter. That'll do it for the segment. Follow me on Twitter, by the way, at ColeRyan9 is where you can find me. You will instantly become a member of the Buckets Brigade, like my recent followers, Chris LaRochelle, Michael, TJ. They're all hopping on board, and once you jump on board, you'll see all the great information shared by the veteran Bucket Brigade members who are holding it down every day during the NBA Finals, sharing stats, trends, injuries, info, opinions, you name it, you get it. Follow me on Twitter and enjoy Game 6, everybody. I can't wait, and win big. Betting the Buckets.
Make sure you take advantage of all the great insight and information that Cole Ryan has over on his Twitter account at Cole Ryan and the number 9. That's how you become a member of the Buckets Brigade. Of course, the season winding down here, so you want to make sure that you're going to be part of the Buckets Brigade for next season. And Cole, an NFL contributor to us here as well on bangthebook.com and also on Bang the Book Radio. So, you know, he will include a lot of NFL stuff, you know, throughout the lead up to the NBA season, of course, throughout the offseason, through the summer months, all that type of thing. So, you know, a multifaceted Twitter follow. So make sure that you follow him on Twitter at Cole Ryan and the number 9. So looking at the Major League Baseball card for today, It's interesting, to say the least. We've got five afternoon games, all 3:10 Eastern or later starts, so they're all out on the West Coast, except for this Washington game between the Cubs and the Nationals coming up here at 4:05. We'll take a look at a few of these games here today. There are some that are kind of interesting to me. For one, a lot of listeners will get this one after this game's already gotten underway, probably. But this one between Miami and San Diego is really interesting to me. And there are a couple of spots like this here on today's card. But Miami wrapping up a 9-game road trip. They're 4-4 on it so far. Road trip that started in Minnesota, went to Phoenix. Now it's out in San Diego. You've got Justin Nicolino on the mound for the Marlins against Luis Perdomo for the Padres. And you've got the Marlins, a small favorite here in this one. And, you know, it's a very interesting type of situation because you've got this team that's a long way away from home. You know, they've been on a fairly taxing road trip, 3 cities, 9 games. They head back home after this one. And they've got a contact-based pitcher on the mound. And a guy that has one of the lowest swinging strike rates in Major League Baseball, one of the lowest in baseball since 2002, actually, over the course of a season. And you know, the Padres are a top 10 offense in WOBA against lefties, weighted on base average. So doesn't really look like a great setup for the Marlins, but Perdomo's been bad. The Marlins have played very well in this series. They got to Drew Pomeranz last night. They blew up Colin Ray on Monday night. So very interesting dynamics here in this game. And sometimes you get these when you've got these getaway day games, whether it's a Wednesday or a Thursday. And this is one of those spots where, you know, I think everything points toward taking San Diego. But again, you've got this pitching matchup where you just don't really know what you're going to get. And that's part of the problem. And one of the things that I've had some issues with this season is when you get these contact-based starting pitchers, you just don't know what you're going to get. You know, there's so much volatility on batted balls. If they get hit at somebody, then they're okay. If they don't, then they have a lot of problems. So I'm kind of trying to limit my exposure a little bit to games with contact-based pitchers, unless they're guys that have, you know, real big extremes. I think I talked about that earlier in the week here. If you've got a guy that induces a lot of fly balls or a guy that induces a lot of ground balls, you know, I can kind of, you know, make some assessments based on that. But with a guy like Nicolino, and also a guy like Perdomo, who, you know, has some strikeouts, but a lot of them in a relief capacity, it can be very, very difficult. But the Cubs and Nationals, this game, 4:05 Eastern time, this is one of my favorite plays of the day. I think that the Cubs are in a little bit of trouble here against Steven Strasburg, who's been absolutely brilliant this season. Strasburg is a perfect 10-0, not that win-loss record means anything to me. But he struck out 32% of the batters he's faced. His peripherals are very strong across the board. On the other side, you've got Jason Hamill, 236 ERA, 370 FIP, 421 XFIP. Peripherals aren't good enough to sustain a low ERA like this. His strikeout rate is a little bit above average, but not a whole lot. Walk rate below average by NL standards because you've got the pitcher hitting as opposed to the DH. 251 BABIP, 85% strand rate. His career BABIP is 301. His career strand rate, 71.3%. So Hamill's got some numbers that are well off of his career averages. Now, to be fair, Jason Hamill's been a guy over the last 3 years that's been very, very good in the first half of the season. Last year had a hamstring injury really right about this time and then missed some starts before the All-Star break, never really got back on track. So we'll see if he's able to avoid that little injury problem this season. But I think he's a guy that's due for some regression. Against Steven Strasburg, you don't really have a whole lot of margin for error. And the Cubs are a great lineup, don't get me wrong, but they do strike out quite a bit as well. And Strasburg, a guy that shouldn't walk too many, you know, should overpower some of these Cubs hitters. So I do like the Nationals here in this afternoon tilt between the Cubs and the Nationals. I think Strasburg has a big advantage over Jason Hamill, and that should be a pretty decent game for our listeners to take advantage of. Looking at the nighttime slate here, a couple of really interesting ones in the 7 o'clock hour. You've got Nate Karns and Drew Smyly. Karns taking on his former team. He was traded from Tampa Bay to Seattle. You've got Drew Smyly, who was skipped in the rotation last time through for a mental break. Now, Smyly, since May 10th, 776 ERA, exactly a 6.00 FIP and a 4.99 XFIP. Now, he's missing bats, but he's not missing barrels. In that span, a 378 BABIP against with 9 home runs against in 31 and a third innings. So Smyly has had all kinds of problems with his command. And What was interesting about this game is that we saw an initial line move on Tampa Bay up from minus 110 in the minus 120, minus 125 range. My bookie actually showing minus 130 out there now. And I think the sentiment here is that the Mariners are very left-handed heavy, and going up against a lefty like Smiley, they're going to have some issues. If you look at them against righties, they've been a top 10 offense most of the season. But against lefties, they have struggled a little bit more, which is, you know, to be expected. But the thing about Smiley this season is, you know, up until recently, he was holding guys to a really low average, had a pretty good BABIP against. That's kind of had some negative regression here over his last few starts. But lefties are slugging 452 against him, and righties are slugging 460. So while lefties aren't reaching base as frequently as righties are, he hasn't really had much of a platoon split from a power standpoint. And that's not good. You know, because if lefties are going to come up there, and maybe righties set the table, lefties wind up hooking, hooking one of his sliders out of the ballpark, something that kind of flattens out in the middle of the plate. Hey, those runs all count the same. So I think when you look at tonight's matchup, I really do think that the Mariners have some value here, particularly with this line growing. Now, I will say this, several of my picks and my picks analysis piece here today have gone against line moves. So, you know, maybe you want to approach some of those with caution, but you know, when I don't agree with a line move, you know, I try to dig out the reasons why, and I try to look at all sides, all perspectives of the game. And like I said, I think for this one, you know, the overriding sentiment is that the Mariners are so left-handed heavy. But again, I mean, that's up to Smiley. You know, it's Smiley's job to keep those guys and hold them down. And he hasn't done it so far this year from a slugging percentage standpoint. So I think the Mariners have got some value here tonight. In this game against the Tampa Bay Rays. Cincinnati and Atlanta, we're starting to see some buyback on this game, which doesn't really surprise me, but Anthony DeSclafani opened a minus 110 favorite with the Reds. Now it's a flip favorite situation at some shops where Atlanta is favored by the minus 110 price. I don't really get it, to be honest with you. Bud Norris, a guy with a 475, 460, 455 pitcher slash, that's ERA, FIP, and XFIP, but 12 relief appearances, 7 starts. In his 7 starts, opposing batters hitting .285 with a .352 on base and a .479 slugging percentage in 159 plate appearances. So Norris was better in short bursts, which is, you know, what you would expect from a guy that's got pretty marginal stuff. When he can eliminate his third pitch or his weakest pitch, you know, guys should have a little bit more success in the bullpen. DeSclafani here, I think that maybe a little bit of this is because he wasn't very impressive his last time out, but it was his first start back from an oblique injury, scattered 8 hits over 6 innings. The one run he gave up was a home run, so he did a good job stranding runners. No, the stuff didn't look great, but command usually is the last thing to come back for a pitcher. And in Atlanta, you know, Turner Field's a decent pitcher's park, even when it warms up a little bit. This Braves lineup basically simulates a AAA lineup, plus Freddie Freeman that, you know, DeSclafani was facing during his rehab appearances. So I would look Cincinnati here tonight. I know it's difficult with that bullpen. That Cincinnati bullpen is atrociously bad, but Atlanta's bullpen is not all that great either. And the Cincinnati offense, while it has tailed off a little bit here of late, you know, they have hit for some pretty good power throughout the season. So I think there's some value on the Reds. DeSclafani threw 102 pitches in his first start back. So it's not like the bullpen's going to have to come in and throw 5 or 6 innings in this game, unless, of course, it goes deep into extras. But I think DeSclafani is in a position here, got that first start out of the way, got some of those nerves out of the way. I think he's in a position here where he can, you know, get back to doing what he does best. That's mixing his pitches, using all the quadrants of the plate. You know, I think this is a good matchup for a guy making his second start of the season. So I do like the Reds here tonight in this game. How about this line move? This is a pretty fascinating one here between Houston and St. Louis. You've got Colin McHugh taking the ball for the Astros, Adam Wainwright taking the ball for the Cardinals. And Wainwright's a guy I've talked about on this show, and I had talked about, you know, in some write-ups here throughout the season. But it seems like Adam Wainwright's maybe found it here. Over his last 3 starts, 8 earned runs on 13 hits over 20 innings with a 20-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio. So, you know, I understand that he still has a 360 ERA over his last 3 starts, but the strikeout-to-walk ratio is coming back. And that's the biggest thing for Adam Wainwright. Adam Wainwright's going to give up some hits. It's the nature of the beast when you're an extreme ground ball guy like he is. It's the walks that are a problem. And if Wainwright found something mechanically, which is what he's been working on, then he can go back to being a really effective pitcher. And another thing I like about this is, you know, I try to make some spot plays against Houston. I'll try to do it with a guy like Jared Weaver, which, you know, seems counterintuitive, but I try to do it with guys that have that veteran pitch ability, guys that can use Houston's aggressiveness against, you know, that lineup. And Wainwright's a guy that can do that. Now, Houston is a team that, you know, I've talked about. I think that they're on the verge of really breaking out. I think that something really positive for them is going to be coming here soon. But Wainwright's not a great matchup for a team like Houston. You know, they have to string hits together against a guy like that. Usually Houston's offense is, you know, a knock here, a walk, and then a three-run bomb. Wainwright's not really giving up a whole lot of home runs here this season. I think he's given up 8 on the year. So he was just having some bad at ball luck, things not getting hit at people, you know, some hard ground balls, getting through holes, getting down the lines, that type of thing. I'm buying Adam Wainwright here in this start. I think you can catch this at minus 115 or minus 120. There's some value on this number. It's starting to climb a little bit. But Colin McHugh is a guy, you know, that we saw one of those line moves where he's got a high ERA at 5.22, 3.84 FIP, 4.00 xFIP. So again, you know, one of these pitchers that people look at and expect positive regression to come. Now, to be fair, he's got a 3.58 BABIP against, but if you look at his batted ball types, I didn't get an exact calculation on his xBABIP, which is expected BABIP, based on, you know, it's a formula that you can use based on his batted ball types. Hasn't given up a whole lot of line drives this year. So he's kind of getting a little bit unlucky with the high BABIP because his hard contact rate's actually below average for this season. His line drive rate is as well. So maybe he's in line for some positive regression, but the Cardinals are the second best offense in baseball against right-handed pitching by WOBA. So it's not a great matchup for McHugh. I think it's a better matchup for Wainwright. I do like the Cardinals here in this one. I'm going to go against what was a little bit of a line move early on because Wainwright dropped about 10 to 15 cents, but we're starting to see some St. Louis buyback here in this one. Another game on my radar for tonight, the Indians and the Royals. So those of you that follow me on Twitter, it wasn't one of my epic Terry Francona rants, but I was very dissatisfied with the way that Terry Francona managed that game last night. Going to his fourth best relief pitcher in Brian Shaw in a game with a one-run lead with Kansas City's 2-3-4-5 hitters coming up. I mean, 2-3-4 if you go 1-2-3 inning. But, you know, now, to be fair, when Brian Shaw blew that game against the Angels over the weekend, it was kind of bad luck. Had a soft single to center that kind of opened, or a soft single to right that opened things up, you know, sacrifice bunt. He didn't give up a batted ball in that inning harder than 70 miles per hour. But he was pitching from behind, and Brian Shaw's done that a lot this year. Francona goes to him last night in a very high leverage spot, has Cody Allen throwing during the inning, doesn't go to Cody Allen. Salvador Perez hits the first pitch out off of Brian Shaw for a two-run homer. Indians lose 3-2. So this is a difficult bounce-back spot for the Indians here. They've had two very tough losses in this series. The Royals are back to doing their roiling thing where they BABIP everybody to death and then manage to hit a home run in a big spot. But for the Indians here, this is the conclusion of a 10-game road trip that began June 6th in Seattle. They played 4 in Seattle, 3 in Anaheim, 3 here in Kansas City. They can go 5-5 here if they win this game today. But this is their 35th game in 35 days. They had a doubleheader in Chicago in late May. Haven't had an off day since May 26th. Their previous off day was May 12th. So for the Indians, this is a really tough spot. And they look like a tired team. They really, truly do. They haven't done much offensively the last few days, you know, aside from when they faced David Huff. You know, the bats look slow through the zone. Guys are kind of dragging a little bit. You can sort of see it. So, you know, with Corey Kluber on the mound here, who's been pretty good, 4 of his last 5 starts, he's given up 2 runs or less, throwing the ball very, very well, coming off a complete game win in Anaheim, 35-6, strikeout to walk right over his last 36 and a third. Corey Kluber's, but for the Indians, you really have to wonder how much offense is going to come for this team here tonight. Ian Kennedy, third time they're facing him, second time they got to him, first time he threw 6 shutout innings. But, man, this is such a bad spot for the Indians. 35 games in 35 days is really difficult. Off day tomorrow, coming home for a 6-game homestand. So, from a value standpoint, it's probably on Kansas City, especially if this number continues to grow with Kluber on the mound. But for me, I'm going to watch this game, of course, being an Indians fan, but I'm also going to watch it, to see what I can pick up from the Indians, from a character standpoint, because this is one of those games that you get throughout the season where you need guys to really step up, and hopefully they're going to be able to do that. So it's a good look there at the Major League Baseball side of things for June 15th. We'll be right back after a quick note from DSI Sportsbook.
This segment of Bang the Book Radio is brought to you by BetDSI Sportsbook. DSI is one of the industry leaders in customer service, wagering options, and is offering Bang the Book listeners a $10 free betting account just for signing up. Simply sign up with a promo code BANG10. Again, that's BANG10 and get $10 free today at BetDSI.
Make sure you head on over there to DSI Sportsbook. Either take advantage of that BANG10 promo code or the BANG300 promo code, 100% for the poker room, 100% for the live casino, and of course, 100% for the sportsbook. So we'll shift gears away from the major daily sports, go to a major of a different kind. That's the U.S. Open coming up this weekend at Oakmont Country Club. We'll bring in Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how are you today, sir?
I'm well, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I am very excited about this tournament. It looks like it's going to be quite interesting for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, I'm happy with the build up to this thing because usually I consider the U.S. Open really my favorite major because I think it's the ultimate test of golf for the players. I mean, sometimes maybe the USGA takes the setup a little too far, but I'm glad that the rough is back. You know, that's the staple of the U.S. Open. The rough is back and the greens are fast and, it's the ultimate test. And I mean, and I think one of the reasons I like the U.S. Open so much is that, it's hard. It's hard for the players, and it's supposed to be hard. You're not supposed to do at the U.S. Open what Rory McIlroy did at Congressional several years ago and shoot, 16 under at the U.S. Open. Are supposed to be pretty good, and I think it will be this week.
Yeah, if you look at the winning scores for this tournament in the past, I mean, they are outstanding to look at. Jordan Spieth last year at Chambers Bay, 5-under. Martin Keimer, 9-under in 2014. That was at Pinehurst, and he won that tournament by 8 strokes. So Eric Compton, Ricky Fowler, 1-under was good enough for second. Justin Rose at Marion 3 years ago, +1. Webb Simpson at Olympic Club, +1. Graham McDowell, Pebble Beach, even par. So you really don't have to go out there and put up a huge score to win this thing, but when you do, you're probably going to win it by a large margin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, pars are very good, and I mean, with a course this difficult, you're going to miss some fairways and you're going to miss some greens, so you're going to have to really scramble, and there's times you're going to have to probably save a bogey with an 8-foot or 10-foot putt. I mean, that's just the way it is with this course. The premium is on really being straight and obviously putting well. And you look at the length of the course, it's, 7,200 some odd yards, but I mean, that's, kind of in the middle in terms of length of a course by tour standards. And you have to, think that puts a lot of players in play. I mean, it's not, like what people thought Beth Page was going to be several years ago where, only the long hitters can play. But, I mean, it's got a lot of intricacies on the course. It has no water hazards. 210-some bunkers is the number I saw. You have almost a 300-yard par 3, along with a 300-yard par 4, a 660-yard par 5, and then 5 pars above 475 yards and 5 pars below 385 yards. So, you got a lot of different type of holes, so it's going to be interesting to see just all the different approaches because, it's not going to be like a regular tour event where it's just like, okay, driver, wedge, putt, either 1 putt for birdie or 2 putt for par and move on. So, I think this makes it really interesting.
Well, and as you said, I mean, from a length standpoint, this thing's not bad, but over 1,270 of the yards are on 2 holes. There's 2 over 600-yard par 5s. So, it's a course that you know, obviously doesn't really play to the bombers all that much, except for on those two holes. And you know, putting is going to be difficult. I mean, we do have some rain in the forecast. We'll talk about that here in a little bit in terms of, you know, what effect that'll have on the course. But did the fact that this course is going to play so tough, I mean, the last time this tournament was at Oakmont was 2007. The winning score was 5 over from Angel Cabrera. So you know, does that make it a lot tougher of a handicap? Because, I mean, there are so many things that can go wrong and so few things that can go right.
Well, I mean, I think it puts a lot of more people in play. And, you know, I don't know how much tougher it does. I mean, obviously the weather forecast can change some things. You know, I think there is going to be some rain. I don't know if it's going to get drenched or not, where it's just going to be, you know, completely firm. I mean, I still think, and I even saw that they had cut the rough a little bit, but it's still going to be pretty high rough, and the greens are still going to be pretty fast. So, you know, I'm not really changing who I picked on the basis of that. I mean, there's always an option, I think, you know, to maybe do something in play, you know, after the first or second round. So, leaving that option there.
Well, and as we've talked about, you know, this is a really big challenge. So you have to look for well-rounded players. So in terms of key statistics that you were looking at here, without giving away any names, you know, what were some of them that you focused on? Because we don't have a whole lot of course form for this thing. It was played here in 2007. It was also played here in 1994. So not a big sample size to go off of from Oakmont Country Club.
Yeah, well, and that's right. And I looked, you know, for a few different stats. I mean, obviously, you want to look at accuracy, and I mean, some guys aren't going to fit all the criteria, but you look at a few different things. I mean, you want, you know, solid numbers on the accuracy front. You also want, you know, decent putting numbers. I also looked at scrambling a lot, and actually, several of the guys that I picked this week are top 25 on the tour and happen to be right there in scrambling. And I mean, that's going to be so important because you're not going to hit every fairway and green. So you're going to have to, you know, save par, you know, and make a 4 when you should make a 5 or excuse me, save 5 when you should make a 6. So, I mean, that's where we are with that. And I just think that, you know, you have to come with the mentality that pars are good. And I think they're going to be very good this week. You know, there's going to be some opportunities for birdie holes. And there's going to be a couple guys that, you know, there's going to be some players that have under par rounds. I think last time I read something where there was only like maybe 7 or 8 total rounds under par the last time they played at Oakmont, and 2 of them were Angel Cabrera, who opened up with 69 and closed with the 69. So, but I think you're going to see some, you know, rounds under par. And I mean, if it really gets rained on, you know, I think that obviously favors the players. But I still think that even par may win the tournament, and, you know, would not surprise me to see this, 1 or 2 over as the finishing score.
I don't know if you saw it earlier this week, but it was something that Adam Kramer of Bleacher Report tweeted out the Instagram link of Byung-Hung An shooting a bunker shot. And, I mean, this thing looked like a perfect bunker shot. And then it picked up speed because he missed the cup, and it rolled about 10 feet down the slope. I mean, I don't know if you saw that clip or not, but these greens are relentless.
I did, and they said that these may roll at some point about above 14 on the stint meter. And that is, you know, for those that don't follow kind of the inside, you know, baseball of this game, I mean, that is just super fast. And, I mean, you're going to see a lot of putts go by. And, you know, guys are going to hit it pure, and it's going to go 6-7 feet by. So, you know, you really have to have touch. I think this is going to be an obvious test of patience for the players. I mean, guys last year were complaining about the fescue and all that stuff at Chambers Bay. Well, this year it's just going to be speed, speed, speed. So, you know, definitely a test of patience and a test of will on this course.
Well, I think that's a good segue into looking overall at the list that you've got. You've got 10 players listed for picking the winners. And one of the things I noticed, one of the common threads outside of a guy like Patrick Reed, is that you've got a lot of veterans on your card here this week. Because when you play a course like this and you feel like you hit a good shot and it rolls 12 feet past the cup and then you've got to go back up the hill for, you know, to save par or something like that, it's the mental element of this course that's probably going to trip a lot of guys up, more so than their respective skill sets.
Absolutely. You know, and I do have the majority of my guys are guys that have played a lot of different U.S. Opens on a lot of different setups. And, I mean, of course, this difficult, obviously, I think makes it very unpredictable. And, I mean, last year, Chambers Bay and the finishes ended up, you know, they ended up getting pretty lucky. I mean, you had mostly top players on the board there. I mean, you had Spieth, and you had Dustin Johnson, and you had Jason Day, and Brad Snedeker made a little run. Roy McIlroy made a little run. Adam Scott. So you had some top players in contention. I think you still will here, but this is something, because of this, it's the great equalizer. You'll have maybe a name or two up there that you won't expect. I mean, you saw Eric Compton at Pinehurst, Gregory Havray finished second to Graham McDowell at Pebble Beach. And, I mean, you're going to have one or two names probably in that top ten that most casual viewers of golf or even some that follow it regularly are like, who are these guys?
Well, the big three in this event, obviously, because it's a major, Day, McIlroy, and Spieth. Day the favorite about 7-1. Rory, about 7-1 as well, and then Spieth a little bit under 10-1, pulling these odds from DSI Sportsbook here. Now, you don't have any of these three guys on your card, and I certainly understand why. It's a tough tournament to go chalky, but are you going to play against any of these guys in matchups? Do you feel like any one of these three is a guy that's going to have a tough week?
The only one that I would probably maybe look to play against in matchups would be Spieth, and I know, you know, we did tap the winner with Spieth at the Colonial, but I think that that was a course that just really favored him. And you know, you knew he was going to play well. It was very suited to his game. I mean, could he go out and win this tournament? Sure. But, I mean, he to me, is not playing like he played last year, which probably is an almost impossible standard to maintain. But I just think that Day, of those three, if I was going to be on those guys, I would rather be on Day or McIlroy necessarily than Spieth. And I may play the McIlroy against Spieth matchup. It's moved a little bit, but I still think there's a little bit of value there. So, you know, Spieth would be the guy of the three I'd look to play against.
Right now at DSI, McIlroy minus 140 against Jordan Spieth for this weekend. The lowest odds you've got on your board here this week, Dustin Johnson, 14-1, 15-1 right now at DSI. So, again, it's very important to make sure that you do shop around for the best prices here. You don't want to cost yourself any possible winnings by taking a lower price. And you know, you have to shop around to do that. So make sure that you've got multiple outs at your disposal. But for DJ here this week, I mean, obviously, he has a massive, huge demon to slay after what happened to him at Chambers Bay last year in the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and I really debated, and he's my lowest odds, not necessarily my top choice to win, but I debated leaving him off and eventually kind of caved in or gave in to putting him on simply because, you know, he's a guy that comes in with really good form. Last 2 weeks, third at the Memorial, fifth at the FedEx St. Jude in Memphis. He's finished no worse than seventh in four of the last five major championships. So he's knocking on the door, and that's the thing. I mean, when you always talk about him and why he's so frustrating, he's got the game to win major championships. There's no question about that, and the physical tools. But, you know, it's always kind of some of those mental blocks and just making mistakes at key moments. And, you know, you kind of see that a little bit with Brooks Koepka. And, you know, you saw it last week at the same dude. I mean, Danny Berger was the deserved winner, but, you know, Koepka made some bad shots really in crucial moments. And I think with Johnson, he's just, you know, he's won 9 events and he's won some big tournaments. He's won some WGCs and he's won some FedEx Cup events and he's beaten tough fields. I mean, he's as good in terms of talent as anybody out there. He might be the most naturally talented player out there, like I always say. But, you know, one of these days you think he's going to knock him down, and it may be a thing where it's like, I'm going to probably have him on the card every tournament until he wins. So I'm probably going to take more losses than wins just out of pure stubbornness with the guy.
Well, you've got a 30-1 shot on here. And again, for those that are interested, you can go to Wes's timeline at Wes Reynolds, the number one, and see the way that he tiers his bet amounts, his unit size on these things. He's got a full unit on Dustin Johnson, 0.75 units on Mickelson, also Matt Kuchar, who we'll talk about here in a second. But for Lefty, you know, guy playing pretty well here of late, finished second at the St. Jude last week, 20th at Memorial, fourth at the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow back in early May. The thing that worries me about Lefty, though, is the way that he kind of started complaining about this course, you know, a week before the event was scheduled to tee off.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's a little bit of psychological stuff I think Phil kind of plays. I mean, you know, Phil is usually very candid and very detailed and thorough in his explanations of things, all things involving the game of golf. But I think Phil actually does come in on a little bit better form than he has the past couple years. And, you know, I think his close calls are well documented at the U.S. Open. He has 6 bridesmaids, second place finishes. But I did see a pattern here. His last 5 runner-up finishes, which are 0-2 at Bethpage, 0-4 at Shinnecock Hills, 0-6 at Wingfoot, 0-9 at Bethpage again, and 2013 at Marion to Dustin Rose. You know, they're all courses based in the Northeast. They're all difficult. Some are more longer than others, and there's different nuances within the course in terms of different surfaces. But, I mean, you know, I think that he's a guy, he's been playing since the very early 90s, you know, on U.S. Open. So he's seen probably about everything that you could see at a U.S. Open. One other angle I kind of looked at here was Ryder Cup motivation. And you see that Phil is 3rd in the standing, so he's in good stead. But he's not yet a total lock. There's only a few hundred points separating 3rd from 8th, so this is a big motivator for Phil, I believe. And he was obviously at the 2014 Ryder Cup very, very candid about, you know, maybe the approach that the PGA of America took or the approach that Tom Watson took as captain. I mean, and the majors are going to give out more points than any Ryder Cup event, so a good finish here and a real top finish, you know, is going to lock him onto the team. And, I mean, he's a prideful guy. You know, he said, I plan on making this as a player. He doesn't want to be a captain's pick. And I think Phil is very, very self-aware in terms of his legacy in golf. And, I mean, kind of the big 3 American players kind of in his era were Tiger, himself, and Jim Furyk. And those guys have done their fair share of losing in the Ryder Cup. And the other 2 aren't going to be on the team, so this is big for Phil. And I know he's thinking about that, and I think this could be some extra motivation. And, you know, he's got to avoid the mistakes, but I think he comes in on good form, and he's actually worth a little bit of a shot this week.
Well, your favorite pick, at least I know he was your favorite pick a couple of weeks ago. You mentioned it here on the show. Anybody who took advantage of that, because U.S. Open odds have been out for a while, you got some closing line value on Matt Kuchar, and that line value continues to grow because Kuch now down to 30-1 at DSI. But Matt Kuchar is playing really well here. Four straight top 10 finishes. And you keyed on this, I would say, a month or so ago now, looking at Kuchar as your guy for this weekend's event.
Yeah, six top 10s in the last eight events. Probably should have won the Memorial. Him or Dustin Johnson could have made a case, but they really didn't make a huge move on Sunday and ended up getting passed by William McGirt and John Curran. But this is a guy that, you know, he's pretty unfloppable and he's pretty even keel. You know, he maybe doesn't always close the best, but he's not a guy that I think really gets totally frustrated when things go wrong. I mean, he's made 12 straight cuts in major championships and six straight cuts in the U.S. Open. Now people think, oh, making the cut might not be impressive, but I mean, most guys don't make 12 straight cuts in just regular tour events, even elite players. And he's made 12 straight at the majors. So, you know, he's an all-around player that doesn't really have a substantial weakness. I mean, you know, not one of the longer hitters, but he hits it long enough. He hits it straight, and he's got a really good short game. So he's just one of those all-around players that I think is pretty good at about everything, maybe not the best at one thing, but, you know, I think he's ready. And, I mean, I was playing him a little bit on some of the futures markets earlier in the year, and he was disappointing a little bit. He was finishing, you know, quality finishes, top 25s, top 20s, top 15s, but really wasn't contending. But I think over the last couple months, he has really found his game and took it to another level. And it would not surprise me. He is my top selection. Would not surprise me to see him win. I just think he fits this course pretty well, and he's a grinder type, and I think you're going to see him definitely contend on Sunday.
Well, one of the guys I said was kind of a little bit of an outlier here on your card. You have two of them that are fairly younger guys, one of them being Patrick Reed, and Reed going off at about 50-1 here. And, you know, actually DSI 40-1, so, you know, again, make sure that you're shopping around for the best number. But for Patrick Reed here, I mean, what is it about this guy? Is it the way that he fits to this course? Is it about the way that he's coming into this event, you know, that you really like Reed this week, or like him enough at least to put him on your card?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not really, I mean, he doesn't have the form that some of the other do. He's 0-for-9 in terms of top 10 finishes at majors, but I mean, I think maybe that was a little more of lacking experience, and I think gaining some experience, like last year, I don't know if people remember that he was actually the 36-hole co-leader at the U.S. Open and was in the final pairing with Jordan Spieth. He had a tough weekend and ended up actually finishing out of the top 10. But Reed, I think, as much as any player that I did play, Reed is an excellent scrambler. He's actually ranked second on the tour and scrambling. So, you know, he's a guy that really, I think, embraces the grind. You know, he's only been playing majors since 2014, because people forget just a few years ago, you know, he was trying to qualify on Monday qualifiers, and that's how he was getting in his fair share of tournaments when he had his wife on the bag, and was able to do that, and then got that big win at Doral. Now, that wasn't a major championship 2 years ago in 2014, but it played like one. And they were very tough conditions. I believe he ended up at 4 under par, and that was the winning score. It might have been 5. I can't remember, but a lot of over par scores that week, and tough weather and tough conditions. Played like a major, so Reed has demonstrated that he can win against elite fields. And I think he's kind of one of those ones that are a little bit under the radar this week, and would not surprise me to see him go pretty low here. He's had kind of just a pedestrian year, but this looks like a time where maybe he can break out.
Well, and he's been first and second in the Hyundai Tournament of Champions over the last 2 years, a field that's included Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, you know, Bubba Watson, Jimmy Walker, a lot of really good players. Now, Kapalua, of course, not the same caliber, of course, that, you know, that Oakmont is. But as you said, he's been a guy that has shown the ability to win in some of those big fields. And, you know, again, as we talked about, so much of this is going to be a mental game here this week at Oakmont. You've got Brant Snedeker, 70-1, Martin Keimer, of course, the winner of the 2014 U.S. Open at Pinehurst, Lee Westwood, Billy Horschel, Tony Finau. Those are the other guys on your card here for this week. Does one of them stand out above the rest?
I'll touch on a couple here. Snedeker, four top 10 finishes and 10 tries at the U.S. Open, including the past 2 years. Solid all-around player, actually one of the better player putters on tour. One that I kind of looked at was these greens, which are going to be fast greens, are Bentgrass Poa Nua, on which, you know, Brant Snedeker's pretty good since 08, and I know that's kind of a longer sample size that might not be as relevant, but he's got four victories on these greens where he's tied actually with Bubba Watson, including earlier this year at Torrey Pines, and the two guys with three victories right behind him are actually Dustin Johnson and Phil Mickelson. You know, Snedeker's a guy that can really get the putter going, and great short game, just very good touch. Kind of a very similar in a way to Kuchar in the fact that he doesn't really have any weaknesses per se. And he's actually, he put a new driver in the bag, a Bridgestone driver, and he's hitting it much longer than he has the past several years. So Snedeker is a guy that stood out to me. Keimer, I kind of looked at the angle. You know, he hits it pretty straight. He's actually somewhat of a long hitter that actually hits it relatively straight in terms of his length. If you remember several podcasts ago, it was the week of the Open de España at Valderrama, which was actually the toughest course probably that either tour, PGA or European, played this year. And he was in contention there in a different type of course, but the rough was actually fairly high and actually probably met U.S. Open standards. The winning score was Andrew Beef Johnston at one over par. And Keimer, I believe, finished three back. Some other guys that were in contention there were Søren Kjeldsen, which is a long shot that I may actually add. Kjeldsen, Ross Fisher, James Morrison, some of those guys that finished well. So that could be maybe an angle that you use here. But, you know, Keimer's a two-time major winner. He's been here before. You know, just one of those guys that's not always in contention, but when he shows up, he really shows up. So that's why I like those guys. Leishman kind of met the standard for, you know, good all-around game. And just a guy that's been knocking on the door and, you know, just has not yet won the big one. So Leishman, I thought, was a little worth something as well.
Well, and there are some alternative betting options here. We got about 90 seconds left streaming live for our listeners that are listening live. Aside from the usual matchups, you also have some props here for the top finishers for American player, European player, Australasian player, and then also there's another one here as well. But Great Britain or Ireland players. In terms of those, did you do any dabbling with any of those prop bets?
I've only played one so far, and I'm going to take a look at those later this afternoon. I did play Retief Goosen at plus 700, so 7-1, in terms of the low South African. Now, I realized to win that prop, and the reason why that price is high is because you got to beat, you know, some really good players. You got to beat Schwartzel, and you got to beat Oosthuizen, but you know, I thought it was worth a stab. He played well in Memphis last week. He got a special exemption into this tournament. And Goosen's a guy that's played well at the U.S. Open, former winner. He's a guy that, you know, I remember him at Shinnecock where he's making 15-foot bogey saves. So, you know, he's going to be pretty unflappable. He played fairly solid at the Players' Championship as well, which was the best field, the last really full field good event on the tour. So, you know, Goosen's a guy that's a little bit under the radar, but I think at 7-1 to be the low South African, he's worth a stab.
All right, one last question for you, and then I'll let you go here. Call your shot. What's the winning score this week at Oakmont?
I am going to say that it is going to be 282-2 over par.
Do you think that the rain's going to help anybody out on Thursday enough to maybe come in with a lower score? Do you think that, you know, as things warm up and get sunbaked a little bit more over the weekend, that it just progressively gets harder for these guys?
It could, and I actually, you know, a couple weeks ago I would have said, okay, it's going to be 278, about 200 par, but, you know, with all the rough and everything, I just think that, you know, so much of it is going to be mental. And, you know, would not surprise me to see somebody break par, but I don't think you're going to see some 4 and 5 or 6 under par score here.
Well, Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Excellent stuff from you as always. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. Good luck this week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks as always for having me, Adam.
Great stuff there from Wes Reynolds. Again, at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. You got to scroll down his timeline a little bit to find his U.S. Open winner picks, but you know, he'll have matchups coming up here later today, and then also some more of those props for the top finisher by region. So as I said, on Thursday's show, I'll be joined by Jay Primetown, MMAOddsBreaker.com. So we'll go with the 11:30 to 12:30 recording tomorrow, or at least that should be the case. I haven't gotten full confirmation from him, but earlier in the week, I did say that Thursday worked better than Friday for him this week. So hopefully that will be the plan. And then coming up on Friday, we'll have Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets. And again, as I said, we'll see if it's to preview Game 7 or wrap up the NBA season and the NBA Finals. That's all in Cleveland's hands on Thursday night. Then we'll also have Kyle Kensing, CFBHuddle.com, join us. So a lot of good stuff still left to come your way here this week. So thank you very much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.